took you home.
I appreciate that. All right. Well, good evening, everyone. It's great to be out here with you again tonight. We are going to talk about this subject, a mind to work, having a mind to work. And in that, you may have heard that phrase before, and it goes back into the book of both Ezra and Nehemiah, where the Jews have been off into Babylonian captivity. They've been there for some 70 years, and now they've been able to come back. Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah, they've all been part of this effort at different stages and times. It was with some difficulty they got the temple, started to rebuild it, had to stop the work. Some difficulty, they tried to work on the wall, and kind of it languished and all this. So it's on and off. They had a variety of issues trying to do it. But what they found out is that the people who were essentially in the neighborhood, if you will, when they moved back into this territory by permission of the king, then king, they moved back in and they just found that they're having people problems. They're having trouble with people in the community, if you'll allow me that terminology, as they were trying to do the Lord's work in an otherwise ungodly, sinful world. They were having trouble doing the Lord's work without pushback from the people around them. And if that sounds rather familiar, like maybe today, and what you find in your schools, and what you find in your community, what you find in your workplace, then if that sounds somewhat familiar, then you ought to be able to identify with what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to start in the book of Ezra, Ezra chapter 4, and we'll look there at verse 21. Ezra 4:21. The first thing that happened once they moved back, they found that some of the neighbors said, you know what, we're going to join in and we're going to help you. We're going to help you build on that temple. And it's not the kind of help that you want or need. In fact, it turns out to be rather like what Jude references. These people were sort of hidden reefs in your love feast. These are people that on the one hand appear to be with you, but their hearts are not with you. They don't have the right mind, the right heart, the right spirit to be able to be in on this work. They turn them down on that. Rather infuriated by this, what they then do, since they're not allowed to join in, what they decide to do is to use the government and the governmental powers to stop the Lord's people from doing the Lord's work. We're going to try to use the laws of the land, and we'll see if we can influence the king and the powers to be to then get involved and make it hard for God's people to do God's work. That kind of sounds like today. I think that happens again. And you're right. It's rather what Solomon said. There's nothing new under the sun. The reality is that Satan has no new plays in his playbook. He just keeps effectively using the same old ones again and again and again and again. Which is why the Old Testament is one of the reasons why it is also written for our learning. And you can go back and you can see these things and you start to pick them up. You see them 3,000 years ago and you say, it's awful similar to today. So listen then, once they got the government involved, here is the decree that the government made. Verse 21 of Ezra chapter 4. So now issued a decree to make these men stop work, that the city may not be rebuilt until a decree is issued by me. That is, we as the government will decide when God's people can do God's work. Ouch. But we do know that exists in certain places in this world today, right? If you want a church, then you have to get some sort of permit or permission from the government to have a church in a certain location. And so again, part of Satan's playbook just simply being manifested in the year 2021. So if you go over into the book of Nehemiah, Nehemiah the fourth chapter, and Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 11. First it said, we'll join in with you. And actually they were just flies in the ointment. Their heart was not with them. Then they said, let's use the government to stop God's people from doing God's work. And God's people pushed on as God's people do. Because we always obey God rather than man, right? And so then the next tactic is this. And it's in Nehemiah chapter 4 verse 11. Our enemy said, They will not know or see until we come among them, kill them, and put a stop to the work. It's gotten to the point that to accomplish their ungodly purposes, they are willing to kill people. It's a pretty sad, sick sort of motivation, isn't it? It really is. But again, it's not unheard of or unknown in this world, even in the year 2021, for ungodly people to be willing to kill people to be able to stop godly people from doing God's work. The enemy of Christ wants you to stop working. So let's just bring it right here to this building and to the people that have assembled here tonight. You need to know this. The enemy of Christ wants you to stop working. He does not want you attending worship assembly. He wants to do anything he can to make sure the doors are shut and they stay shut. The enemy of Christ does not want you inviting a friend, a family member, or a neighbor. Not on a Sunday, not on a Monday, not any day. Wants you to feel like it would be imposing upon somebody else to invite them to a Bible study, to ask if they worship anywhere, maybe even to say hello or shake hands with them, but just wants you to stop working. Show no kindness. Keep yourself away. Do nothing that might influence someone else for Jesus Christ. And why is that? Because in Matthew chapter 13, and this is when you start to see some of the parts and pieces of this, of these lessons coming together. We talked this morning about the idea of sowing and reaping. If we are to ever reap, either we or someone at some point in time had to do what? Had to sow. If there is no sowing, there can be no reaping. And our enemy wants there to be no seed. No seed, no growth. Notice with me in Matthew chapter 13, beginning in verse 18. Hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one on whom seed was sown beside the road. The one on whom the seed was sown in the rocky place. This is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises, you know, like when people threaten to kill you if you dare build something for the Lord, when affliction arises, when they get the government involved to shut you down, when affliction arises, when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. And the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, the worry of the world, and the deceitful of wealth, choke the word and becomes unfruitful. And the one on whom seed was sown on the good soil, this is the man who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and brings forth some 100, some 60, and some 30. But the key to every single one of those is the fact that seed was sown. May or may not have grown, may or may not have lasted. But the key to every one of those scenarios is there was seed that was put out there. What your enemy wants you to do in stopping working is to plant, to sow no seed. Because if there is no seed, there is no growth. How does the seed get into the field? It gets there by work. That's how it gets there. There's even proverbs about someone who has seed and leaves it in a barn. You're not going to multiply it so long as it stays in the seed sack in the barn. It's got to be put in the planter, it's got to be taken to the field, and someone's got to actually do all that and put it in the field. And once you've done that, now you have the potentiality for growth. No work, no seed sown, no growth. Which is why the enemy of Christ wants you to stop working. Let's go over to the book of Romans, Romans the 10th chapter. Romans chapter 10 and verse 14. Verses 14 and 15. How will they call on him in whom they have not believed? How will they believe in him in whom they have not heard? How will they hear without a preacher? How will they preach unless they are sent? Just as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things. Can I modify that for the little purpose of our lesson tonight? How beautiful are the feet of those who go to work. Because when we go to work, we sow seed. And it has the potentiality for that growth. Let's go back to the book of Nehemiah. So, if our enemy wants us to stop working, and it happened in Nehemiah's day, and Ezra's day, and Zerubbabel's day, maybe it behooves us to go back and look, since we're running into the same kinds of things. People that say that are with us, but they're not with us. People that try to utilize the governments, those who even use threats and fears and things to get us to stop. May it behoove us to go back and look at a case where all that happened and see what the tactics are. And when we learn what the tactics are, then we begin to recognize them for our own day and age, and then we can say, ah, I'm on to you. Right? I'm on to you because we've seen this play out before. In Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 1, it says, so when it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, to Geshem the Arab, and to the rest of the enemies of our enemies. Catch that word? Nehemiah's not pulling any punches here, is he? These people are enemies of the Lord's work. The New Testament refers to people who are enemies of the cross of Christ. And let's all be very, very frank about it. We still have enemies of the cross of Christ even today. Enemies still obey. And to the rest of our enemies, that I had rebuilt the wall, and that no breach remained in it, although at the time I had not set up the doors and the gates. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me, saying, come, let us meet together in Shavirim, in the plain of Ono. But they were planning to harm me. What he says is that they built a wall. Now, why would an ancient city like that want to have a wall around it? What he found when he got back, they didn't have a wall, and because they didn't have a wall, it was a dangerous place to be. I mean, just imagine you're a home in a kind of a rough part of town, but you don't have any locks on your doors. Worse, you don't have any doors. How do you keep anybody out? How do you have any nice stuff in your house? You know the old phrase, this is why we can't have nice things. Well, it would be true if you don't have doors and you don't have locks on your doors. That's a great way not to have nice things. And if you put a whole bunch of unprotected people together in an unprotected city, well, that just makes an even better hunting ground. At least if you lived out in the countryside, right? Maybe they leave you alone because they don't notice you. They pass you by or they say, well, that's only one house. I want to go where there's 30 houses. It's a better hunting ground. It would just make it dangerous. And so what a city wall did, it brought protection to the people in there. It allowed for prosperity to be able to be created. And it gave them sustainability. It allowed them to put down roots and have sustainability as a city. Without it, there's very little prospect of any kind of sustainability. And there's a reason why I've said that two or three times now. And it's because not only were they supposed to have a wall, but you know what? In the Christian life, there's a form, a good form of a wall that we have as well. For them, it was protection, defense, and sustainability. It enabled a city to make a long-term go of being a city. So I ask you this question. What is your protection? What is your defense, or what is it that makes for your sustainability as a Christian? So I'm glad you're here tonight. I'm glad you're a faithful Christian tonight. And if after this 4 days that you should ever invite me back in the future, in the years to come, I would like to think that in coming back, that you will still be a Christian. That you have sustained the lifestyle. That you're even stronger and more prosperous as a Christian in the years to come. So what is it for you that makes it possible for you to make a long-term go of being a Christian? What is your protection? What is your wall? I'll give you some suggestions. Prayer is one of the things that's in that mix. That's part of the mortar that makes up the wall of your protection and your sustainability. Your study of God's Word, so you actually know what's in the book, where it's at, and better yet, what it means. So that in a moment's notice, you can bring it up to recall and say, aha, this is how we deal with this situation. You know, in all of the young kids' classes that you do over here, obviously, we're not just biding time. We're not just taking the kids off to sort of entertain them while the adults have a Bible study. That's not the purpose of that over there. You do realize the purpose of taking the kids and having age-appropriate studies for them is, over a period of time, what we're trying to do is develop disciples. We're developing disciples through that. And all of those stories about Moses and Noah and Abraham and Jonah and all of these, we're either learning positive things or negative things that we're taking positive information from. Let's not do that. Why don't we do that? Because that doesn't work. When God says go, you better go, because if you don't, it gets rough on you. There's a lesson for you from Jonah. When it seems like everyone around you is just complaining and murmuring and whining and all that, do you give in or do you give it to God? Well, Moses would say, don't give in, you give it to God. Because when you give in and you take it personal and you strike back, now you put yourself crossways with God. They're in sin and now you're in sin. They've jeopardized or lost their reward, and maybe you just did too. And so it's in those moments what we want our children to be able to do as they get into the teen years, the adolescent years, teen years, and up and out of the house. In these difficult moments is to very quickly recall those kinds of things and to have guiding principles as to how to handle that issue right now. So that's what we're up to. Prayers are part of our building of a wall of protection and give us sustainability. Our study of God's Word, where it is, what it says, what it means. Worship is a part of our wall of defense and protection and sustainability. Praises that we give to God factor into this wall of protection that is around us. Time and involvement with God's people and God's work puts that strong wall of protection, defense, and sustainability around us. Telling others, encouraging the saints, sacrificing for saints, all of these things are the stones and the mortar that goes into the wall. And I can tell you this, if you've been at it long enough, at some point in time, you just can't imagine living any other way than in Christ. Is that fair? You just can't imagine being anywhere else or doing anything else other than loving the Lord and serving Him. That's it. There's just no other option. And what you know is, when you start getting to that point, you realize my wall of sustainability, it's up, it's strong, and it's giving me the protection I need to do this long term, to make a long term go of it. However, just like with Nehemiah, the Sanballat, these Tobias, these people, there are people today who do not want to see you build that wall of protection around yourself. They don't want to see you taking time for worship. They'll laugh at time for study. And who are you praying to anyway? Your prayers probably don't get higher than the ceiling. There are people like that. They mocked him. And if you read this whole section, what you hear is, when they heard that they were building a wall, they said, if a fox jumps on it, it'll probably fall down. Remember that? Remember the mocking nature of all of that? The enemy wants you to stop your work so that there is no wall, no wall of protection for you, for your family, for your friends, for anyone. They don't want a wall of protection for anyone. Here's the bottom line. The Sanballats, the Tobias, and all the other enemies there, they got their needs met by there being no wall around Jerusalem. They were benefited if there was never a wall there. If that place was always in chaos, if it was always vulnerable, they got their needs met. And I want to tell you a sad, sad commentary on life. You know that old expression, misery loves company? It's true. If you want a scriptural reference, it's actually in Romans, the first chapter, in verse 32. And it's the fact that not only do they know what truth is, but they give hearty approval to people who will practice the same things that they are doing. That's the world that we live in. And as you start to do better, as things start to improve in your life, as you start to say no to things you ought to be a no to, and yes to the things you ought to be a yes to, it's going to be threatening to people who still want to be a yes to things that God wants to be a no to, and they're a no to things that God says be a yes to. You become a threat to them. And they start to not understand you. As a matter of fact, it forces them to kind of look at themselves and what they're up to. You're wanting to make a change. They don't want to make a change. And it's easier to criticize you and to try to get you to stop building than to turn the focus inwardly on themselves and try to improve their own lives. That's the world we live in. It's sad. It's sick. It's wrong. It's not healthy, it's not beautiful, it's not pure. That is the world we live in. This is not just a commentary on a group of God's people trying to build a wall around the city 3,000 years ago. This is a commentary on how the world works. And you all need to know, and I need to know, and to be aware, so that we get our wall built while having compassion for those who are still vulnerable to every wind of doctrine, people who are vulnerable to every new temptation, to every new fangled thing that comes along, the next new shiny thing. I heard a verse say it this way. Once I heard it, I can't get it out of my mind. Everyone heard of ADHD? Right, attention deficit and the hyperactivity disorder, the ADHD thing. Many people have ADOS. Anyone familiar with ADOS? It's called attention deficit. Ooh, shiny. Ooh, shiny. The next new thing. The new fancy thing. The new popular thing. The new thing that's trendy. No questions asked. No Bible consulted to see if it's a good, righteous thing. Everyone's doing it. If you want to be protected and defensed against that, you got to build the wall. It requires spending time in prayer and study and worship. It takes spending time and getting involved and telling the others, encouraging the saints, sacrificing for the saints, giving yourself to this work. That's what it takes. But just know, just like them, you start to do it, and you're going to tick some people off who are getting their needs met by you being vulnerable and having walls down. They're not going to like it. It says in that verse, verse 1, chapter 6, and that no breach remained in it. No breach, no holes left in it. I say again, our enemies are benefited when we have holes in our walls. The easiest way to have holes in our walls is to constantly stop work. It's the easiest way to have holes and breaches in the walls is if we constantly, we're on, then we're off. We're on, then we're off. We're on, then we're off. I'm a Christian on Sunday, but the other 6 days I'm not. I'm on this year, I'm off next year. Christianity is an always on occupation. It's always building. And there is no time. You will get your day of rest, but it's also when you close your eyes and eternal sleep. Your day of rest is coming, and it's not today. Today is a day of work. What your enemy would like is for you not to get so serious about all that religious stuff. Don't get so extreme. Are you seriously going to go to church for 4 straight nights? Yes. You want to come? I'm going to believe the stuff I'm learning. It's opened my eyes about how the world works and how it's put together. And I have this, and the more I know, the greater peace I have. And I'm not tossed all over the place and turned inside out by every nasty news report that comes along. That's part of why I do it. Besides that, I think it's just right. Enemies today get their emotional needs met. Enemies today get their political agendas met. Enemies today get their sin needs met by you having holes in your walls. And you get holes in your walls by stopping work. Let's look at Paul. Let's look at Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 2. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 2. 1 Corinthians 2:2, he says, "For I determined to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified." Jesus Christ and Him crucified. That's what I determined to know among you. I wasn't there for the vacation plan. I wasn't there for sightseeing. I came there, and I came there to work. Did not shrink. He did the whole work. And if you notice in verse 3, and I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. He did his work, but he did it in what? There was some fearfulness. You do realize the Apostle Paul was once told by the Lord, "Keep doing your work. I won't let them harm you," right? He's in rough places. If you kind of have that heart-stopping moment, this could be dangerous. You're not alone. Christians have run into that many times. Notice what else. He says, "I was with you not only in weakness and in fear and in much trembling." How or why would that ever happen? That a person would go to do the work of an evangelist or an apostle and do it with much trembling. I dare say that would happen because there were pressures put on him to stop. There were people who were no real friends to him. There were flies in the ointment that then used governmental means of trying to stop him. That happened. They put him in jail, right? They used the powers of the be to beat on him. He would drag him out and stone him once. So his life was definitely threatened. Do you see how Paul falls in? Paul is building, he's working for the Lord. And just like back in the days of Nehemiah, the same tactics were being used against the Apostle Paul. What did he do? He kept working. Let's go back to Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 2. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent a message to me saying, come, let us meet together in Shephira in the plain of Ono. But they were planning to harm me. Those who want you to slow down or stop the Lord's work, technically at the end of the day, want to do you harm. Because when your walls aren't built, you are vulnerable. You're setting yourself up not to have long-term stability or sustainability as a Christian, which means it could kill you. And if you allow me the term, they want to harm you, either directly or indirectly. They're doing you harm by slowing you down. So you think about those who tell you it's weird for you to go to church so much, to use the popular verbiage there. You don't contribute to such a thing, do you? Well, that sounds like a cult. All the various things that get drug out. It's the same old stuff, folks. It hasn't changed in thousands of years. They used it on Nehemiah. They used it on Paul. They will certainly use it on you. They will call you weak. They will call you weak-minded. They will say you're simply using religion like a crutch. They'll try to put fear in you. They'll also use FOMO, fear of missing out. Fear of missing out. Well, you know what you're missing out on. Well, everyone else on Wednesday night is going to. Well, how are you ever going to if you don't? Once conversing with a family member, as a teenager, conversing with a family member, and they're talking about, well, when you go to the school dance, no, I'm not going to school dances. Why not? Well, I think it's lasciviousness. It's unchaste handling of males and females, and so I'm not going to do that. This is teenage me trying to explain to a family member why I'm not doing that. And her question in return to me is, well, if you're not going to dance, how will you ever get a wife? Well, that's something to put in a kid's head, isn't it? I don't dance, I can't get a wife. I didn't dance, I got a wife. I've got four kids, two of whom are also married, who never danced. Okay? So yes, you can get a spouse without going to the school dance. It is all right to do that. But that fear of missing out, it's a big one. You're no fun, they'll say. You used to be fun. You're not fun anymore. That's a nice weapon to use on somebody, especially someone who's cleaning up their act, putting away drugs, putting away alcohol, not running around, hopping bed to bed, and everything else that goes on. Isn't that something to say to that person? You're no fun anymore. No, I'm carrying on like a person of dignity and worth, created in the image of God. That's fun, by the way, to be made in the image of God and to act like it. They'll try to make you tremble. Maybe they'll make you compromise. Nehemiah said, no, I'm not going to. Paul said, no, I'm not going to. And what I'm hoping you will say is, no, I'm not going to compromise. In verse 3, here's what Nehemiah had to say. Nehemiah chapter 6, verse 3. So I sent messengers to them saying, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? Nice response. I bet they left him alone after that, right? They probably just, ah, you're right. You got us. You clearly have the moral high ground, and we acquiesce. We defer. You're right. Oh, no. No, no. It's great, and I hope you're able to make your defense, and I hope you're able to do what Nehemiah did. Sometimes you have to make it again and again and again and again because they keep coming back relentlessly. They did with Nehemiah. Notice verse 4. So they sent messages to me 4 times in this manner, and I answered them in the same way. Especially to the younger crowd, I want to say to you, it's friends are a wonderful thing. Sometimes friends are no friends at all. Bad company does corrupt good morals. Very biblical. So keep that in mind. Sometimes friends are not true friends. Find good ones. Particularly ones that are of the household of the faith. Who have the same goals and aspirations like heaven. They're thinking about heaven. They have their helmet of salvation. They're thinking about heaven. Make friends of God's people. All right. Well, notice the next verse. 5-7. They're going to have to ratchet it up a little bit. This is a common tactic. 5-7. Then Sanballat sent his servant to me in the same manner a 5th time with an open letter in his hand. So, time number 5. But watch how they escalate things a little bit here. Verse 6. In it was written, in a report among the nations. What's that mean? Everybody knows this. Everybody knows this. What does everyone know? And Geshmu says that you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Uh-oh. They couldn't get to you legitimately, so you know what they're going to do now? They're just going to make it up. We're just going to start making stuff up. We're going to create the lie, and then we're going to send it out. We're going to put it on social media. We'll try to get it out on the news. We'll tell your boss about it. We'll tell the school about it. We're just going to lie about it. If you don't do what we want you to do, we are going to lie. And we're telling you up front we're going to do it to you. We're going to smear you. That's what we're going to do. That you and the Jews are planning to rebel. Therefore, that's why they're building the wall. That's what you're really up. We can read hearts and minds now. That's okay for us to do. Read hearts and minds. That's why you're rebuilding a wall. And by the way, Nehemiah, and you are to be their king according to these reports that we just made up out of thin air in our own minds. You have also appointed prophets to proclaim in Jerusalem concerning you, a king is in Judah. And now let me report to the king, according to these reports. Can I add in that we just made up out of thin air that are total lies, but it's a nice smear campaign, and so we're going to use it anyway? It's going to be reported to the king according to the reports. So, before we have to do that, come now, let us counsel together. We need to strike a deal. Otherwise, you're in trouble by all the lies we're going to tell about you. A 5th time, this time with a threat. Paul said he did his work with much trembling. Do you suppose Nehemiah might have done some of his work with a little bit of trembling too? Probably so. Lie about you. Lie about your intentions if necessary. I want you to notice what his answer was when people are willing to lie. Verses 8 and 9. Then I sent a message to him saying, such things as you are saying have not been done, but you are inventing them in your own mind. For all of them were trying to frighten us, thinking they will become discouraged in the work and it will not be done. But now, oh God, strengthen my hands. He was not going to stop the work. They invented it all in hopes that they would stop the work. He is not going to do it. Now notice the next tactic. Begins in verse 10 through verse 13. When I entered the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, the son of Mehitael, who was confined at home, he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, for they are coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you at night. There's now someone kind of close, almost a confidant. Someone close to me. Now he's saying, you know what? We need to get out of here. It's dangerous. We need to go to the temple. We need to lock ourselves in there. But I said, should a man like me flee? Could one such as I go to the temple to save his life? I will not go in. Verse 12, then I perceived that surely God had not sent him, but he uttered his prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. And otherwise, a person with, part of the religious credentials here, had actually been hired to try to influence. We don't live in a society where maybe expert witnesses are actually for sale. We don't live in a society like that, are we? Where for the right amount of money, or the right kind of considerations, or for a job, you know, in some high-ranking position, what do you want the report to say? And I'll make it say that. It still happens. And it happened 3,000 years ago. Verse 13, and he was hired for this reason, that I might become frightened and act accordingly and sin, so that they might have an evil report in order that they could reproach me. And then, that's not bad enough. You see how it's just wave after wave after wave? This is why you need tomorrow night's lesson, by the way. I'll talk about how to stand in the face of this kind of stuff. Verse 14, remember, O my God, Tobiah and Sanballat, according to these works of theirs, and also Noadiah, the prophetess, and the rest of the prophets who were trying to frighten me. It wasn't just a few, it was a bunch. They came in waves. They came in bunches. My brethren, you better know your work. You better be willing to do your work. You better have your walls up. Because the enemy can come in bunches and in waves. Verses 15 and 16, they did not stop and they got the work done. So the wall was completed on the 25th of the month of Elul in 52 days when our enemies heard it. And this is just beautiful after everything that has been gone through. Listen to this. When our enemies heard of it and all the nations surrounding us saw it, they lost their confidence. When God's people do God's work, God's way, and we're unified in it, it sends a powerful message to those who would oppose. You want our enemy to lose confidence? You take your stand. You do your work. You keep at it. You be unified in it. Say to the work. They will lose confidence when they see that they had pulled out every single stop to make the word stop, and they weren't able to do it. They lost their confidence, for they recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. All right, one last thing for you. Something behind the scenes, you may or may not have seen this, but it's in verses 17 to 19. Also in those days, many letters went from the nobles of Judah to Tobiah. So Tobiah is one of the bad guys in this account. He is. Are you saying that some of the nobles, some of the leading people of the nation, of God's people, were actually in league with an enemy of God that wanted the work to stop? For many in Judah were bound by an oath to him. I thought their allegiance was supposed to be to God. It was. But they're also under an oath to Tobiah. Because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Ara, and his son Jehonan was married, had married the daughter of Meshulam, the daughter of Berechiah. So they're all mixed into it family-wise. They'd intermixed that way. And so they owed an allegiance to someone other than God. Moreover, they were speaking about his good deeds. They were actually talking up one of the enemies. He's not such a bad guy. Oh, you're impugning his character. Well, don't you know who he is? They were talking him up while he was actively working against all of them. And they reported my words to him. They were speaking about his good deeds in my presence and reported my words to him. Then Tobias sent letters to frighten me. They had made deals with the enemy. They talked up the enemy. Nothing wrong with that guy. What's your problem, Nehemiah? Why is this wall so important to you anyway? My encouragement to you is this. Don't stop the work. Don't stop the work for anybody. Don't stop the work for any reason. If people are going to be saved in this area, in this time, it's going to be by your work. You are needed. But our enemy has a decided interest in you stopping your work and having your walls down and keeping you vulnerable so that you can't sustain. That's their end goal. That's their game. The question is, are we going to fall into their game? Or are we going to follow the Lord's plan? The lesson is yours tonight. If tonight you're not a Christian, you need to become one. And I would encourage you to do it tonight. You need to have walls of sustainability up around you. You need to have the things that will allow you to be well today and tomorrow and throughout all eternity. And we can help put you in that position. And the first step in that, if you believe, is to repent of sinful things. Get out the harmful things out of the life. Confess your belief in Jesus Christ. Be proud of that. Be willing to state that publicly, that you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. And then live faithfully from that point forward. The prayers and the study and the worship and the work and all the things that go along with it. If tonight you've been baptized, but if we're being honest about it, there's a lot of breaches in our walls. There's a section of our walls that are half built, some that have great big holes in them. If there is sin in the life tonight and you know it, let's strengthen you in that area. Because you know Satan's coming after you in that area. It's just guaranteed. He's coming after you in that area. And he wants the walls down so he can more easily get to you. Let's get the walls put back in place. Let's start that work by, first of all, you repenting of it. If it's of a private nature, go to God in prayer and ask for forgiveness of it and do the deeds in keeping with repentance. If it's of a public nature, publicly confess, we'll pray with you and for you for the forgiveness of it. We'll team you up with someone that will walk with you until you are out of that dark, hard spot. And if tonight you simply need the prayers of the fire against for strength, for encouragement, maybe teaching you how to better build on that, someone to be an accountability person to make sure that you are consistently building.